I said that.
That's because you're a jerk. And if it wasn't a family show, I'd call you a few other things.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 376, recorded on January 31st, 2015.
Hello, and welcome to the 376th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 209th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and occasionally includes gaming flashbacks.
Well, that's what we have this week. But before we get into that, what have you been playing?
I have been playing absolutely nothing ever since I learned of the greatest tragedy to befall the digital age coming this Monday.
Uh-oh.
Gem and the Holograms and My Little Pony are both being taken off of Netflix.
Oh.
I could kill myself.
Oh. That means you'll actually have to buy the DVDs.
Yes! I have to buy the freaking DVDs now. It's not fair.
Well, how much space do you have in your hard drive? Because you could probably buy it off Amazon, too, as a digital thing.
Oh, who wants a digital anything? Because apparently they could just take away your digital stuff.
Hey, I have Rift Trax, which is also DRM-free, so they can't take it away from me.
I'm devastated.
Oh.
Devastated. Well, no, but in all seriousness, I have been trying to play Grim Fandango.
Okay.
Since they had that sale on Good Old Games.
I bought it off Steam.
But apparently, like, whatever magical computer gods make the PCs run decided that I'm not allowed to play it.
Why? It's supposed to be DRM-free.
I don't know.
Well, I've been playing it on...
No, I mean the new remastered one.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah. Nope.
Supposed to be DRM-free.
I'm not allowed to play it. The computer god said no.
Is it because of your computer?
I don't know. Something about video cards and operating systems. You're asking the wrong person.
You should stop playing Windows 95.
All right. You will pry my Windows XP out of my cold, dead hands. Or whenever Microsoft can actually put together an operating system worth a damn.
I have the original Grim Fandango on disk. It just doesn't like to play with Windows 7, which is why I had to get that software to play it on Windows 7. And here's the thing. Is that...
it doesn't like playing on Windows 7?
But it does play with the software. And I got remastered on Steam because then, you know, it'll be up to date and it's sort of improved. And the thing is that, you know, when you have it on Steam, you can just uninstall and reinstall it on other computers that you have your account on. My problem...
Right, I tried it on three different computers.
My problem is that there were certain audio cues that were taken out without... I don't know why. For example, have you played it before?
No, and that's why I was really excited. Like I said, I missed the boat on that one the first time around.
Well,
and I will, by the way, mention that I only bothered to try and play it because you've talked about it so much.
Well, then you won't notice anything missing.
Fantastic.
I will warn you, though, that it does not autosave.
Well, it doesn't really matter because I can't get the game to launch.
Well, I'm just saying because I was playing... I did not save since I got to the forest, and during the transition from year one to year two, it crashed, and I realized I had to play the entire forest over again.
You should always save when you enter the forest, dude. Always. I mean, that's like a hardcore rule number one.
Well, here's the thing. Well, it has nothing to do with...
Bad shit lives in the forest. It doesn't matter what world.
Well, actually, I was in Rubikava when it crashed, so... I mean, that's irrelevant. The thing is that, you know, I'm used to games auto-saving, you know. And it actually says...
Well, yes, yeah, because you got spoiled.
Yeah. So next time I'm going to... The thing is that I've played the game about 50 times, so it's not doesn't bother me that much. All I did was stop playing for a while so I can get the sense of frustration out, you know, so that when I play it again... It won't be like, oh, I have to do this all over again right now. You know, when you lose a massive chunk of game, right? Because the save didn't save correctly. Don't you feel that sometimes you just want to leave the game alone for a few days, then get back to it so that the fact that you have to do everything over again doesn't sting quite as much?
I'll do you one better. I usually just stop playing it altogether.
No, that's not a good way to be.
Why?
It's still,
they should stop making a buggy game.
It's not... You know... I'm going to let it go for now. There's just some slight audio cues that were removed for whatever reason. I don't understand. which I really liked because one of them was actually a little bit of a little sound gag, you know. It'll be interesting to see what the sales were like, because I think I was one of 20 people to buy Grim Fandango when it first came out, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how many people buy it this time. Now, the thing is that other games which have been, you know, which did not sell when they first came out, when they're re-released, remastered, or have a reboot, they still don't sell when they come out. So it's not a guarantee that a game that is, you know, very highly thought of, even though it didn't sell well, will sell well again. It isn't a given. So I'll be interested to see what the sales for Grim Fandango is.
Well, they're going to be refunding me my $15 if they can't make it work on my computer.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could always try the Steam version.
Nah.
I don't know.
That requires me to do more things.
And the thing with... I don't know. I have to check to see what the system requirements for Grim Fandango are. But you know what?
It's a 30-year-old game. They can't really be that demanding.
It's a pity, you know, because Windows 10 is going to be free for people who own Windows 7 and Windows 8.
Why isn't it free for people who refuse to switch from XP? Because they don't care.
I don't know. You know. I can always ask. My Larry Herb, aka Major Nelson, about what the if what the deal is, and maybe I can get you a free copy of Windows 10. It requires Grim Fandango requires a minimum of Windows Vista, which means you're just out of the range there. It's like one operating system.
Why are they forcing me to buy an inferior operating system just so I could play their 30-year-old game? Nope, not going to happen.
Inferior.
Well, it doesn't work on Windows 7 either, apparently.
No, it works on Windows 7, obviously, because I'm using Windows 7.
not according to my computers.
You just, you know, you got to upgrade to 7, if only because...
I have two computers with Windows 7. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work for you? Really?
Doesn't work on either computer.
Oh, you must have really old computers.
They're like 3 years old. That's friggin' ridiculous to think that they're so outdated that they can't play a 30-year-old game. I'm gonna rage quit in like 2 seconds. I'm gonna demand that they give me back my money because this is ridiculous bullshit.
You know what I can do? I can send you my physical copy of Grim Fandango and see if that works on your computer. Because Grim Fandango came out in 98, which would be Windows 98, and Windows 98 works on Windows XP, of course.
Well, I don't care about Grim Fandango enough, thank you, but that was a very sweet offer.
No, why refuse? Anyway,
because I don't care about it that much. Like, it was an impulse purchase to begin with, and it's already cost me far too much time to be worth any enjoyment I might get from it. I'm so angry. And they're taking away my gem!
Okay. Here's the thing about Grim Fandango. However, it's still one of the best adventure games that you'll ever play. And the humor is great. There are some laugh-out-loud moments, but you know this kind of game. It's sort of like you're chuckling all the way through. You know? The characters are great. The situation is great. If you get some of the references, that's just the better. And it has a unique art style, like it's based on, you know, the Mexican Day of the Dead, and you're basically playing a Calica doll, you know. So I really hope that you are able to get it working.
Nah.
Yeah. So I've been playing a little bit of Grim Fandango, and that's really about it. I haven't had a chance to play much else. Now, you're telling me that you haven't been playing on your daily iOS binge?
Well, you know, not every episode of Gem was golden. So some of them you could just, you know, give half your attention to.
Wasn't there supposed to be a live-action Gem movie?
Don't even talk to me about that travesty that hasn't been released yet. That is going to fail so spectacularly. And that's why, by the way, they're taking the wonderful cartoon show off of Netflix so that people forget how awesome the cartoon was when they compare it with the terrible, terrible upcoming movie. Dude, I read that script. That thing's going to bomb.
Well, I was about to say, well, what if they make a live action My Little Pony movie? But that's not going to happen.
Don't talk to me. Just don't talk to me.
So that's all you've done is attempt to play Grim Fandango, and that's it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. We're going to move on to the gaming flashback. Again, I'm avoiding doing Psychonauts, and I'm going to do this other major game. So go ahead, Paul.
Shadow of Colossus, featured in the gaming flashback. Shadow of the Colossus, is an action-adventure game published by Sony Computer Entertainment for the PlayStation 2. The game was released in North America and Japan in October of 2005 and PAL territories in February of 2006. It was directed by Fumito Ueda and developed by Sony's International Production Studio One, also known as Team Ico, the same development team responsible for the cult hit Ico. Shadow of the Colossus is considered the spiritual successor to Ico. Progression through Shadow of the Colossus occurs in cycles. Beginning at the central point in the expansive landscape, the player seeks out and defends a colossus.
Defeats.
And then,
that's a big difference between defeating and defending there.
I blame the copywriter. And is then returned to the central point to repeat the process. To find each colossus, Wander may raise his sword. Wander, apparently the name of the protagonist, yes. While in a sunlit area and to reflect beams of light, which will converge when the sword is pointed in the right direction of the next encounter. The journey to a Colossus, is seldom a sword fight matter.
Straightforward
matter. Who wrote this copy?
It's written in English.
No, it's not. What'd you pass it through? Google Translate? Stretches of varied terrain often require that a detour be taken along the way. Most colossi are located in remote areas, such as atop cliffs or within ancient structures. Wander climbs the first colossus to stab the sigil on its forehead. The heads-up display shows the character's health and stamina in the lower right, as well as Colossus's health in the upper left. Once the Colossus is found, the player must discover its weakness.
I think that's just a description of a screenshot that isn't there. So, I'm going to have to edit that out. Moving on.
Once a Colossus is found, the player must discover its weakness in order to defeat it. Each Colossus dwells in a unique lair, and most Colossi cannot be defeated without making use of the surrounding environment. Every Colossus has at least one weak point, indicated by a glowing sigil that can be illuminated and identified by the sword's reflected light. Each Colossus has areas covered with fur or protruding ledges, which Wander may use to grip and scale the Colossus while it thrashes about in an attempt to dislodge him. While scaling a Colossus, the player must act quickly, as Wander has a limited stamina gauge that decreases while he hangs on to the creature. While the Colossi are the only enemies, there are natural animals in the environment. Only one species, however, has any effect on gameplay. Eating the tail of a certain kind of lizard increases Wander's stamina gauge. Likewise, the player may find that fruit increases Wander's maximum health. Shadow of the Colossus's commercial reception was positive, with sales of 140,000 copies in its first week of retail in Japan, reaching number one on the charts. Almost 80% of the initial Japanese shipment was sold within 2 days. These figures compare favorably with Ico, which has been well received by critics, but failed to sell a significant number of units. The game was placed on Sony's list of greatest hits on August 6th of 2006. Unlike Ico, Shadow of the Colossus received far more exposure, due in part to Sony putting its weight behind a massive advertising campaign. It was advertised in game magazines, on television, and on the internet, including a viral marketing campaign that launched in October of 2005.
You know, I never played this game, but I know it usually involves you climbing, and you're this like tiny little person climbing this huge giant. And I think that seemed like a genre that was new at the time. I don't know if... I mean, it was basically an action puzzle game because you had to, quote-unquote, solve the Colossus.
Right.
But I never played it. I know a lot of people loved that game. I know Jordan did not like that game. Or was it Ico that he did not like?
Can't remember.
Did you ever play this?
No, I never did, but apparently they're tackling something that Final Fantasy has always struggled with, which was, you know, giant master bosses.
Yeah.
Against these tiny little people that always seem completely within range.
But this game was nothing but giant bosses. See, that was the unique part. I mean, it was sort of like Monster Hunter meets some kaiju movie, you know? So, anyways, now, if you recall, a few weeks ago, we had Andrew Yoon on the show, and he used to work for Joystick. Well, we have some really sad news, and this actually was news that was first hinted at the beginning of the week. I think it was actually after I released the podcast, in fact. You know, when I posted the podcast, this news started popping up as a rumor, and it became true. Joystick and Massively shut down amid AOL downsizing. And this comes first from Gamma Sutra. The rumors are true. Venerable games media outlet Joystick is closing up shop alongside its MMO-focused sister site Massively and a host of other AOL-owned websites. Rumor of the impending shutdown were published earlier this week by Joystick itself and confirmed today via Twitter by now former Joystick employee Alexander Swolinski. Regrettably, all staff appear to have lost their jobs. Developers, in turn, have lost a pair of websites that served as valuable outlets for press coverage and industry reporting. Joystick recently celebrated its 10-year anniversary at its launch in 2004 as a spinoff of AOL's tech-focused blog Engadget. Going forward, Engadget is expected to take up some of Joystick and Massively's responsibility for game industry reporting. So anyway, I understand, Paul, that you have some actual personal contact with the site, the guy who was running the site, Alexander Swolinski.
I do, actually. Alex and I spoke briefly back when I was doing my research while getting my game design master's. He gave me my first coverage for my international study on the correlation between sexual identity and video game playing preferences.
This is back in 2009.
Yeah, it was back in 2009. Yeah, he generated a ton of publicity for me, and I'm going to be really I'm really, really sad to see sites like Joystick go that were, you know, impartial and often groundbreaking.
Well, he posted it in the Washington Blade, in Newsweekly, and of course Joystick itself as well. Here's the other thing though. Most publications last a lot longer than 10 years. And the thing about everything goes faster on the internet. I mean, 10 years is not a very long time for a magazine, right? But it's extremely venerable when it comes to video game sites, you know? In terms of video game sites, it lasts a very long... What's it called? That's a long time, 10 years. It's almost a lifetime.
I mean, in terms of websites, it's a very long time.
That's what I meant. And Massively...
No, not even video game, just websites in general.
And here's the thing that's sad is that Massively is the only site that I know of offhand. I'm pretty sure there's other sites, but it's the only site that I know of offhand that was the place to go to for MMO news, you know? I mean, all the other, I can't think of any, you know? So if you have and the other thing is I actually did a podcast for Joystick. I was not a member. I did not run it. I was just someone who was, you know, I was just one of the hosts. I didn't run it. And it actually kickstarted my desire to start my own podcast after that one ended. So that podcast is Joystick is actually indirectly responsible for me starting Video Game Roundtable.
Oh, look at that.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, we both know Alexander Swolinski. It sounds like an Eastern European name. I wonder if you're both from the same Ukrainian region.
You know, there are more countries than just Ukraine in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, but still. Really, there are?
That's racist, Jonah.
No, that's nationalist, racist. Isn't it? No, that's not a thing.
That's racist.
Anyway, it's going to be interesting what happens to Engadget, because Engadget is a... is packed full of news to begin with. It's very hardware focused, you know. And it's going to be kind of unwieldy for Engadget to have to cover gaming news, you know. That because, like I said, Engadget is more tech. It's more hardware, you know. It focuses on the hardware side, not the software side. So yeah, It's very sad. From what I understand, Polygon is also having issues, but that's only a few years old. It's not you know, something that's been around for 10 years.
Well, I'm sad.
Yeah. Anyways, maybe this will make you laugh. Moving on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Left Behind Games executive fined millions by the SEC and banned from trading stock. This comes to us from Polygon. A Hawaii district court has brought judgment against Ronald Zuka, the chief executive officer of Left Behind Games and developer of the Christian-themed real-time strategy games of the same name. The United States Securities and Exchange Commission said in a litigation release yesterday, Zuka is liable for $2.6 million in, quote, disgorgement, interest, and penalties, and has been permanently banned from trading penny stocks. The judgment follows an August 2014 ruling where Left Behind's founder, Troy Landon, was found liable for over $3.6 million under similar circumstances. The SEC claims that Landon issued nearly 2 billion shares of stock to Zuka in exchange for consulting work for Left Behind Games. And in issuing its judgment, the court found that Zuka did not, in fact, perform any such work. Instead, Linden and Zuka conspired to use sale of the stock to generate revenue in the form of kickbacks for the company itself. The SEC says that the company's stock was suspended by the SEC in September of 2013 and revoked in February 24th of 2014. When the charges were brought against him, Reuters quoted Zuka as stating that he was ignorant of the entire affair. Quote, I'm just a video game guy. If any violation occurred, it would never have been intentional and certainly never fraudulent. My attorney told me that any person that earned shares could use them for any purpose, he said. For more than 2 years, I've asked the SEC to explain how and if I violated any rule so that I could self-report it. As I see it, the government has systematically and intentionally conspired to dismantle Left Behind Games, and the facts are both true and hard to believe, worthy of a Ron Howard film or John Grisham novel.
Oh, boy. So the government decided we don't like this Christian fundamentalist game about the rapture, so we're going to bring it down. Yeah.
Which in our new Republican majority of you know, a third of our government really seems unlikely.
Yeah. Now, for those of you who don't know what Left Behind is, it's a book by LaTroy and Jenkins in which real true Christians are taken up to meet God in the rapture. It's the day of the apocalypse. And then all the sinners are left on earth. And apparently very unmoved as children are vanishing all over the place. They barely notice it. It was first a film that starred Kirk Cameron. And then a remake was released starring Nicolas Cage. And the games were just simply terrible. They were so cheaply done that you have to wonder if this was an Uwe Boll sort of thing in which they were laundering money through the game.
You know, and I'm not going to sit here and take the easy point of criticism about, you know, their game subject matter or whatever. But I will point out that it is really difficult for me to believe any kind of conspiracy theory, just because they have what I would consider to be a sensitive subject matter, or at least a subject matter that any portion of the game buying public might consider controversial.
Yeah, but you know,
the first thing to do, you know, when you get caught doing wrong, is to say, "Oh no, this is a personal attack." No, it's not. They're pointing out things that you did illegally with your stock and your money.
Here's the thing: when Left Behind, the first one, first came out, it was advertised the hell out of, and all I remember were stacks and stacks and stacks of this game, just sitting at GameStop unsold, you know. And this is when PC games had more of a presence in GameStop, you know, before they were put into the little corner where you couldn't see them.
Because now they have, like, none.
They have like, one shelf.
They have one shelf behind the counter. Behind the counter.
Yeah, I mean, at least Best Buy has a longer shelf. But it's all stuff that you'd probably buy online. You know, like The Sims, World of Warcraft, you know, that sort of thing. It's just hilarious to me. I mean, you know, I mean,
well, my bigger point here, you know, seeing how you've briefly mentioned both of them, is that, you know, I'd give the same advice to a Christian game maker, you know, as I would give to a gay game maker or any other fringe topic game maker. If you make a good game, people will buy it. If you don't, it's not persecution. You just made a bad game. Yeah. Try again.
The thing is that I'm not even thinking about the content. It was just very cheaply made, and that's why it leads me to believe that maybe this was sort of like a cover for just, you know, just making money with the minimum of effort, you know. The thing is that I am curious. I somehow want to play the first game just to see how bad it is. Normally, I only like to watch bad movies because at least bad movies have a lot of entertainment value, you know. You don't have to interact with them in any way. You know, a bad game with bad controls, you know, you'll quit in frustration because you really can't do anything with it. But from what I understand, you know, it's like they have shooting and all that stuff, but instead of dying, the people who are shot get converted. You know, it's that just that weird kind of thing. I mean, I also reviewed a game called Catechumen, which was a first-person shooter, which was another. I called it the first-person shooter that Rod and Todd would play. You know. So, anyways, we're gonna go to another light article, which is funny, but also maybe a little scary too, if you really want to think about it. Bill Gates says he's concerned about machines becoming super intelligent, and this comes to us from GameSpot. As part of a wide-ranging and fascinating recent Reddit Ask Me Anything, which is called an AMA, a fan asked Gates if he thought machine superintelligence might become a concern moving forward. Gates said, at first, machines will do human-helping jobs like picking fruit, but that's racist, isn't it? But the danger... that's racist.
That's racist.
But the danger could come as they grow smarter and smarter and start viewing as being forced to pick fruit as being racist. I am at the camp that is concerned about superintelligence, he said. First, the machines will get a lot of jobs for us and not be super intelligent. More racism. That should be positive if we manage it well. A few decades after that, though, the intelligence is strong enough to be in concern. I agree with Elon Musk and some of the others on this, and don't understand why some people are not concerned. Musk, the founder of SpaceX and Tesla, said last summer that superintelligent AI systems are, quote, potentially more dangerous than nukes. Gates was also asked if he thought full end-to-end encryption of all internet activity could do anything to protect humanity from the threat of superintelligent machines. Unfortunately, Gates did not answer. Now, we could laugh about this now because it sort of sounds like Gates is being afraid of you know, Skynet coming, you know, and the Terminators. But in the far future, when computers may have that level of, you know, of capacity, I mean, here's the thing. The human brain is something like, I don't know what it is, like a billion worth of bytes of information or something, you know, something ridiculously large that we could never have in any computer. You know, it would like take up a city block. But as that technology gets smaller and smaller, the idea of things becoming self-aware might be a problem.
I know several humans who are barely self-aware, so I'm not really that concerned.
Well, you know, it takes a ton of computing power just to emulate a cockroach.
I think the bigger concern is AI with personalities. No, I don't feel like opening Google. I don't agree with Left Behind Politics. You can't play that game. I think that's the bigger concern.
Okay, now you're getting at the demon seed.
Computer's judging me.
Now you're getting into Demon Seed. Have you heard of Demon Seed?
No.
It's the movie in which a voice, you know, the house is a computer. You know, a computer runs a house, right? And it has a voice.
Yes, I saw this parodied on The Simpsons.
Yeah, and eventually it rapes a
woman. Oh, and 2001 Space Odyssey.
It also rapes a woman in that and has a computer baby.
TMI? TMI?
That's what it's famous for. I'm sorry, but that's what it's famous for.
you don't just drop the R word out of nowhere.
Well, I can't really.
A warning next time.
It forcibly impregnates a woman.
There you go. That's better.
And she has a computer.
I mean, it's not better, but at least it's less shocking.
she gets pregnant in like a short time and she has a computer baby. It was scary. It's not scary that much anymore. And you're more likely to think of, when you're watching that film, Pierce Brosnan and talking to Marge Simpson. Yes. But still, you know, I don't think we have anything to worry about now, you know. And the thing is that, you know, there's also Colossus, the Forbin Project, in which a computer became hyper-intelligent and took control of our nuclear stockpile. And it started talking to the Russian computer, and they made an agreement, and they took over both nuclear stockpiles and forced humanity to do what it wanted. So there's your movie. There's your movie thing for today. Colossus, the Forbin Project, Demon Seed.
I'm more concerned about them judging my taste in television.
Well, he's like, sorry, Paul.
Sorry, Paul. We don't care that Jem's back. We're not letting you watch it. We think you have a
Netflix
problem.
Netflix is already doing. Maybe. Hey, Netflix was taken over by a computer. Computer says, no, Paul, you can't watch Jem anymore. I'm going to go on to
my. It's a conspiracy.
I'm going to go to my Netflix and it's going to say, yes, you can watch Jem because you're not addicted to it. You haven't seen it yet. But this person over here.
They took away my Saturday morning cartoons. What alternative did I have?
That was a super intelligent computer, too. They took away our Saturday morning network cartoons.
They're trying to break me, Jonah. The computers are coming for me.
They're going to force you to watch the Smurfs.
They're taking away everything I love.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next item, which is more of a concern for our UK brethren, but it does have ramifications for here as well. Go ahead, Paul. Oh, by the way, you know, there's a certain theme going on here. It's sort of like Big Brother theme. So go ahead, Paul, with this next item.
Google changes UK privacy policy but avoids hefty fine. And this comes to us from Ars Technica. Google has been forced to change its privacy policy in the UK following a 3-year investigation by the country's data privacy watchdog, but the company has avoided a huge fine. The Information Commissioner's Office found that Google was, quote, too vague when describing how it used people's personal data and has ordered it to make substantial changes. In March of 2012, the company combined around 70 existing privacy policies into one. It was a move that caused concern among privacy policy advocates, who said that it was no longer clear on how people's data was collected and shared. The changes meant that Google could collect user data on one service and use it on another, from Google Search to YouTube, for example. The ICO originally demanded Google change its privacy policy in July of 2013, but the case became bogged down in negotiations. Considering its 3-year investigation, the ICO said that it's crucial that companies better explain how user data is being handled. The watchdog added that Google's combined privacy policy did not provide, quote, sufficient information on how personal data was being collected. Quote, it is vital that there is clear and effective information available to users to understand the implications of their data being combined, said Steve Eckersley, a head of enforcement at the ICO. The detailed agreement Google has signed, setting out its commitments, will ensure that. The company just made substantial changes.
No,
to
the
its
company
privacy.
Must make. This is something that's happening.
The company must make substantial changes to its privacy policy in the UK by the 30th of June 2015. Google has also agreed that any further changes to its privacy policy over the next 2 years will be subject to user testing.
So, yeah. Here's the thing, is that I don't fear what Google sees me doing. I fear what Google does with what it sees me doing. That's the issue here.
Yeah, that's true. Like, being in that same camp of having nothing to hide, I don't really mind people, companies knowing if they're going to provide me with better, more targeted marketing. Like, don't keep showing me ads for crap I don't want to buy. Show me ads for things that I actually might want to buy.
Yeah. The thing is that it isn't, what I have to hide. It's wondering what Google has to hide. Because the thing is that why aren't they transparent with what they're doing with the data? That's the question I have, I understand that Google's going to take whatever you know, searching that I do. And also it's included with YouTube. And I know that it's watching what I watch on YouTube, because you know what happens on YouTube is that you watch a bunch of stuff, it'll start suggesting stuff that you might like, right? But
right. And if those are accurate suggestions, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
But the thing is that why are you so secretive about the data that you're collecting is the question. You know, there shouldn't be any, you know, if you have, like I said, I have nothing to hide, so therefore I don't give a shit if they, you know, watch what I browse. But I wonder what they have to hide if they don't want to tell me what they're doing with the information they're getting from me.
Yeah, I mean, look, anybody who doesn't know that Google is in business to make money, just like every other brand or company you can think of, is kind of silly. So I would assume that they're using my data to try to sell me more shit.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form. I mean, that's step number one. As long as they can all keep copping to that, then we're all going to get along. I mean, it's just like Facebook. Facebook isn't sitting there just to, you know, exist. It's there to make money.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move on to listener feedback. Go ahead, Paul.
Didn't I just read?
No, Michelle.
Yes, I read. I did read. From Michelle via Twitter. I listened to your podcast last night. It was enjoyable! Exclamation point. I don't know much about games, but you were very good about not shutting out those who aren't experts and made trying a game seem fun. This was my first time listening. Well, thank you, Michelle. I'm glad to hear from a new listener, especially female listeners.
Yeah, we are cognizant of that people who listen to the podcast may not know much about the video games or the video game industry. We won't dumb it down, but we will speak in plain language.
And you know what? We often have to remind ourselves and each other to take it back a step, because just because a new development has happened in a 30-year story doesn't mean that everybody like us has been following it for 30 years.
Right. Next item, Keto via email. Love the latest podcast. Have to agree about game ratings. Numbers don't just make sense for rating works of art. For movies, I usually try to find a reviewer or two that I trust. I really miss Gene Siskel. I used to agree with him on everything. As for video games, it's harder because there are so many reviewers, but I agree that with you that on just about everyone, except maybe Peggle.
You don't like Peggle?
You know, maybe some people don't like Plinko, you know?
That's fine. It's just, I think you might actually be the first person that I've ever heard say they don't like Peggle. I mean, I can understand not liking Peggle emulators or those who have copied the mechanic, but... But really? The original? You don't like it? Okay, well, I'm to each their own.
Yeah. And he says, back to doing Excel spreadsheets on my Xbox.
Woohoo! Xbox spreadsheets right. The game!
Yeah, that was a joke we did last week. Okay, next one. Take it away, Paul.
From Alpha Shard, great show, guys. Enjoyed the topics greatly. At Joystick No Longer Scoring, I agree. I never liked the scoring of any game. It never told me what I really needed to know about the game. Saying 3 out of 5 stars or 90% is like saying banana or starfish. completely arbitrary and meaningless. I need and want to know how the person felt about the game they played. Take Dragon Age Inquisition. I have heard many detailed reviews from people I know about the game and what they liked and didn't. And I value that over some random score some reviewer site gives. As you guys pointed out, someone who doesn't like a genre of games may be biased against it and will hate it no matter what. I had argued with someone the other day who had felt that since Dark Souls had no story, it was a bad game, when they were clearly missing the point of the game altogether. So I'm glad that they have decided to drop scoring a game and entice people into actually read the review.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, this...
It's just kind of sad since Joystick just closed earlier this week.
Yeah, I wonder if their decision to stop scoring reviews is the reason we're being closed now. Maybe someone's angry at them for that. And
no, I doubt it. I think that probably what happened was somebody was like, look, we're in trouble. We got to do something to get our numbers back up. And this was, you know, their attempt to be, you know, to raise traffic, frankly. And unfortunately, so. Just didn't seem to come in time.
I don't think that was – no. It doesn't seem like that decision was a way to, you know, increase traffic. I think that was more of a case in which they were tired of the feedback they were getting – from why did you give this score when you gave that score, you know?
Right, and because the gaming public is kind of getting to the point where they realize that a solid score is on a subjective piece of art like a video game isn't going to help, they were trying to adjust to that trend, but they didn't do it soon enough. Maybe I really don't know, having no inside information on why it was closed down. But moving on, at Jonah joining NC, speaking of reviewing WoW, that is awesome. Have you made videos for them already?
I'm not making videos for them at all. I'm making videos for myself. You see, the thing is that I've not joined Channel Awesome or Red Learn Media or anything like that. This is just my way of, you know, and I started experimenting with Pinnacle, and some things of it really annoyed me. Like, get this. It has an option for you to record directly off your webcam, right? From the software. But then the software says that the video it recorded from its own is not compatible with itself, which I find baffling. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. It wasn't that the webcam was incompatible because it recorded from the webcam, but it just, oh, by the way, all this stuff that you did with the webcam, we can't use it. It's an incompatible video format, even though it was the same freaking software that made the video itself. Weird. Anyways.
I agree. Very weird.
Moving on.
At Hatred AO rating, my first impulse to hearing this was good. I don't think little children should be playing this violent game. And before Paul says, yes, the parents should be paying attention to what their kids play, I guess I can't deny they have the right to make whatever game they want and to make it available, but stores do have the right to refuse to sell something if they don't want to sell it. I'm fine with the rating to make it clear just how violent a game is. Of course, there are plenty of violent games, but do have much more context as to why the violence is happening. I remember being bothered when my daughter was playing Fable 2 and she wiped out the starting village. For some reason, the game didn't summon any guards for that action.
You think so? All the guards were dead at that point, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, without getting into the backstory. There is a double standard with the violence being more acceptable for kids to witness. I've asked myself this. Why is it okay to have a movie or game that kids kill people or see violent acts, yet you get some nudity and suddenly everyone loses their mind? I think at least for me, it's because violence is wrong and sex is not. It's easy to say, well, this is fantasy and we're just having fun, make-believe killing people. But sex, there's nothing wrong or bad about. It's a natural thing and can be difficult to discuss with someone who isn't mature enough to handle it yet. And I mean the real intimate details and not just when two people love each other. It is a difficult subject, and it's up to each parent to decide when to talk to his or her children about these things.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. Kids will see naked people all the time. They will not see violence all the time.
See, kids can see naked people the instant they are alone.
Yeah, I mean, they see naked people, but they're not going to see people shooting people in the brain all the time, you know?
Like, just focusing on exactly what Alpha Shard has said – you know, if there's nothing wrong with sex, then why is it less acceptable to see it? And if there's something wrong with violence, why is it more acceptable to see it? That seems really backwards.
Here's the thing. The thing is that, you know, you get the harsher ratings for sexual content just from people being naked. You know, that's the problem I have. And not even guys with hard-ons. You know, it's just being naked, you know?
Please, Facebook censors and bans photos of two clothed men looking at each other.
Kissing, if I remember.
Not even kissing. Oh. Looking at each other.
The difference with that is that people send in complaints about it, and Facebook is lazy, and they don't actually check to see what they're complaining about. You know, that's a whole other problem they have.
We don't have time for that in this podcast. Sorry.
But, you know.
It's noon, and I have dinner plans. We don't have that kind of time.
Well, okay, we're going to move on because we do have a question of the week that you really are into.
Oh, wait, but we weren't done.
I know.
At Alpha Shard, at Posable Toys, I think the idea is really is brilliant to have movable figures that would respond or give signals in game actions. This would greatly increase interactivity. I also am tempted to get some amiibos if for no other reason than to display them. This is a DLC I can get behind.
Yeah, that's,
at least you got a figure to play with.
These figurines are bonus in another way. Aside from being DLC, they're also good tchotchkes that you can just put on a shelf.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and Starlanders. Why did I want to say Starlanders?
Skylanders.
Skylanders. Thank you. I knew
Star and Sky. You see, they're related.
And Skylanders is already trying to do something like that with figures that break in half, so you could mix and match the two halves.
Matryoshka figurines.
Aww.
You have little characters inside that are separate DLC.
Yeah, and you know, Disney's Infinity, they do have this, you know, this whole thing with stackable power discs that you put underneath your figure to give them extra powers. And I just think, I agree. I just think that's the next step in the Toys to Life category.
Oh, you know, it would be a great idea, actually. Have something akin to Tamagotchi in which you buy an egg, but you don't know what's inside the egg. You know?
Oh my God, that would be horrific. Could you imagine, unless that egg was priced at like $3, could you imagine the outrage?
But people do that already, so...
Yeah, if it's priced at like $3, but I don't think you're gonna get eggs down to the point where, and the toys are gonna all look exactly the same. Ooh, that's a really risky venture, Jonah.
I'm willing to bet you Tamagotchi are coming back at some point with more advanced AI and graphics. That's what I think. We're going to move on to the question of the week, and this one was suggested by Paul. And the question is, should Nintendo partner with Disney? Now, this is based on a Gamenesia article in which there were some reports, you know, that Nintendo and Disney should, you know, would acquire one, you know, Disney would acquire Nintendo or something like that. And the question was asked, would this be good for both parties if this sort of thing happened?
Well, the speculation is that Nintendo has been trying, you know, they've developed this fantastic stable of beloved characters, and they've been looking for a while to branch out of video games. And you know, the speculation was, would they be a good fit to be partnered with Disney to oversee the non-video game aspects of their IPs?
Well, legally it's not possible anyway, so it's not
gonna... No, you're absolutely right. Legally it's not possible for Disney to acquire any other companies at this point. Otherwise they're going to start breaking monopoly and antitrust laws. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that they couldn't still both exist as independent companies and partner on some specific projects.
Like, well, they do have that,
Disney
in the park,
like, but... have Disney release a Mario movie. That isn't awful.
All right. So the thing is that I think no. And the reason is that they're two different cultures altogether. I mean, what happens when one company oversees another company's characters is that they tend to start to conform to the other companies.
Well, I mean, you say that, but, you know, Squaresoft owns Kingdom Hearts, not Disney. Disney just licenses out their characters to be used by Squaresoft. And as long as Squaresoft doesn't try to do a handful of really particular things, they kind of have... you know, a little bit more free reign in their product.
But question then, what would Disney do with Mario then? That is, you know, because Nintendo has a Japanese vision of Mario, right?
And I think that as long as Disney didn't try to reinvent the characters, that they could probably come up with really compelling stories.
But you know what? I think they would, because it's already happening with Star Wars. You know, they're reinventing Star Wars to fit the Disney mold.
Are they re-envisioning Star Wars to, you know, make a successful business mode?
Well, it was successful in the first three films. And, you know...
Yeah, they were successful in the first three films, and only fan loyalty got the prequels any money.
Sales right now.
I mean, they were terrible.
Well, Marvel is suffering from sales, you know.
How is Marvel suffering from sales?
From actual monetary sales. Their sales are down. You know?
Are you kidding? Those characters are more visible than ever. Those brands have become bankable in a way that they never have been before.
Talk about Marvel.
You are talking out of your mind.
Marvel Comics. And I'll tell you something. Disney does not own all the Marvel film rights, just so you know.
Right.
I'm talking about Marvel Comics, which Disney owns lock, stock, and barrel. Those are going down. Sales of the comics are going down.
Perhaps domestically.
No.
Disney's big success in comics has always been overseas, though.
Yeah.
So before you start saying that they don't know how to do comics in general, maybe they just have problems doing comics in this country.
Marvel Comics are also falling abroad as well. So, you know, here's the thing is that, you know, you have to be careful. What Disney would have to do is say, okay, look, they would have to do what some companies do and say, listen, what Microsoft's doing in Minecraft, right? Microsoft bought Minecraft lock, stock, and barrel. But what they're saying is, you go do what you want and make us money. You know, we're not going to talk to you about it. We're not going to, influence you about it. All you're going to do is do what you want and make us money. You know, and that they leave culturally, they leave them on their own island. And that's what Disney would have to do with Nintendo. Just say,
I think as long as Nintendo retained final creative say over what happens, like, you know, final script approval or whatever, then it could be a really interesting partnership.
Yeah.
Nobody knows how to make money like Disney.
Well, here's the thing. It would be very interesting to see what happens if, you know, Disney had Pixar do a Mario movie.
Don't even get me started on Pixar.
Wait, what's wrong?
That would be a horrendous nightmare.
John Lasseter is a huge fan of Studio Ghibli, so I think he would, you know, it would be Pixar's computing might with the writing by the people who are holding sway over Nintendo's franchises. Why would you think a Mario Pixar thing would be bad? I mean,
I have real problems with Pixar films. Every single one of them is great for like the first 20 minutes, and then right at the beginning of Act 2, each and every one of them takes this sharp left turn and then becomes a total suck fest.
I thought you loved Wreck-It Ralph. What are you talking about?
Wreck-It Ralph wasn't Pixar. Wreck-It Ralph was Disney Animation. Frozen was Disney Animation. These are two separate teams in the same corporation.
Because when Wreck-It Ralph was Pixar.
No.
Huh.
It's like talking to a wall with you sometimes.
Excuse me, I did not.
If you call me princess, I will smack you. Don't even.
I'm not going
to. I'm in that kind of a mood.
Anyway, Paul is in a mood, but he did bring up the question of the week.
I could agree with you that, you know, Disney Animation Studios, not Pixar, making a movie for Nintendo's game characters has the potential to be awesome, especially if Nintendo keeps final script approval.
So the question of the week is, should Nintendo partner with Disney? We're going to include the link so you can read the opinion piece as well from Gymnesia.
Yeah, if it was news, we'd read the news article, but it's just opinion that I thought
was interesting. It's just a long opinion item based on, you know, some rumor mongering that's been going on.
Yeah, but again, like I said, they legally can't buy any more companies.
Yeah.
They'll have too much a share of entertainment for certain young markets.
Yeah. So anyways, that's the podcast for the week. Keep on writing in whichever mode you're doing it in, either via its Twitter or email or just posting on gamingpodcast.net, you know. I'm going to be changing the boilerplate at some point. So just today, I'm just going to say, if you want to write in, go to gamingpodcast.net and write in the comments section. Just so you know, there is a one-time moderation, because, you know, there's spam coming into the filter, and I have to remove the spam. So we have to make sure that your letter is not spam, so you can post again and again without having to do it. So once you get approved once, you get to post whenever you want.
And apparently Michelle found us via Twitter, so you go, girl.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I also post a link on my Twitter feed, so I have like a couple thousand Twitter followers, so.
Well, you're you. Some of us don't have a couple thousand Twitter followers, even though we should.
I'm
not on Twitter, that's why.
That's not great. I mean, if I had like a million Twitter followers or 20 million Twitter followers, I think Lady Gaga has something like 150 million Twitter followers, something like that. I don't know. I haven't checked her Twitter follower numbers.
I'm just not on Twitter. I just think it's one of the dumbest things ever.
Well, the entire point, and see, that's how I learned about joysticks closure. Because Alexander Swalinski posted, it's official, we're done.
Yeah, but it's also on his Facebook page. I just think Twitter is dumb.
The thing is that Twitter is also mobile. That's the entire point of Twitter, is that, you know, you get messages mobily.
Yeah. Okay.
Your life is not going to end if you're not on Twitter.
I just don't see the value. I think it's kind of dumb. I think it's a dumb waste of time, and I have too many of those in my life as it is.
I'll tweet to Lady Gaga that you don't go on Twitter because it's a waste of time in your life.
No, I don't go to Twitter because it's a waste of time, and I'll be happy to listen to her next song.
She'll probably agree with you.
You see, that's the thing, though. Lady Gaga has someone whose full-time job it is to sit there and tweet for her.
Well,
I don't have that kind of time in my life.
That's not entirely true, but okay.
Yeah, she'll drop in once in a while herself, I'm sure. But yeah. she has a marketing person whose job it is to sit there and tweet as her.
You know, I don't know what this has to do with anything about the podcast, except for someone...
Twitter's stupid. That, people should know. The world must know, Jonah.
So anyway, you can contact the main way to contact write us email is to go to gamingpodcast.net and post a comment there. And we enjoy reading your emails; it's always fun.
Yeah, you can find us through Twitter. That's how that got started.
Yeah, and we especially like letters from people of the female persuasion because they often have a different viewpoint on.
Or anybody whose viewpoint differs from ours. I mean, really, I would be more than happy to be told I'm wrong.
Yeah,
so, it's all about being able to open a discourse with people that we may or may not agree with.
Yeah, everybody. So listen, when you write in, tell Paul why he's full of shit, and he'll be happy. I mean, it's better than it's not quite getting hate mail, but
I was about to say we're getting dangerously close to me asking for hate mail again.
No, he just wants to hear people say he's full of shit.
Yeah, but then if you're going to do that, like have a well thought out argument that I can at least address.
But make sure you have the phrase "you're full of shit" in it, though.
I never said that.
I said that.
That's because you're a jerk. And if it wasn't a family show, I'd call you a few other things.
And on that note, we will see you next week and hope you enjoy the comedy.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's good advice.